Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani, all rights reserved. Chapter 14. Justice Callie started to back out of Billy's driveway several days later, Joe arrived and parked his truck directly behind her van. "Would you mind moving so I can get out?" She leaned out the window and yelled at him somewhat irritably because, as usual, she had much to do before she could sleep that night. "No, we're going out for beer and pizza," he announced, walking toward her. The look on her face must have communicated that she thought he was out of his mind, which she did, because he continued, "Billy's orders, not a mating ritual. He said you look like a piece of dog shit." He momentarily paused, then corrected himself. "No, he said you look like a piece of curly-do. I think you look like a piece of dog shit." She laughed, and, encouraged, Joe opened the door of the van. "Come on, take some time off," he coaxed. "It's not helping Billy if he worries about you getting sick taking care of him." She wanted to protest, but she knew he was right. She had seen Billy watching her and using his binoculars to study the pictures others had taken of the two of them since his confinement began. "Callie looks tired. Callie losing weight, too. Callie getting gray like Billy," he had sighed many times. "Okay, I'll go for the pizza," she reluctantly agreed for Billy's sake, "but no beer." Normally, one beer at the right time of the month could make her think amorous thoughts about the Pope. Now she felt so tired and strung out, one sip would probably put her to sleep. Not a good idea with a 5-mile drive home and a lot of work yet ahead. "Fear not, I won't take advantage of you in a drunken state," Joe later promised with mock chivalry as he filled her glass from the pitcher of beer he had ordered at the pizzeria. "I was more concerned about falling asleep while driving," she yawned. "I'll give you a ride home and then bring you back tomorrow morning," he immediately volunteered. "I thought you said you wouldn't take advantage of me." "I won't if you've been drinking, but I might try if you're sober. Now that I've gotten to know you better, I don't think I could handle you if you were drunk." "Why not?" she asked, thinking that, after only a few sips of beer, he was beginning to resemble the Pope, and that what she felt seemed less like sleepy and more like something else. "Because I suspect you'd be one hell of a handful in bed drunk, then cut my balls off the next morning when you sobered up," he replied, filling his own glass, "like those female spiders who eat their mates." "Good analogy," she decided. "Eat your pizza." A short while later, Justine came barreling up to the booth and greeted Joe effusively. Then she saw Callie. "Oh, Callie, I didn't know you were here," she exclaimed, obviously disappointed. "Joe and I are discussing the merits of vegetarian pizza," Callie replied, filling her glass again. "How's your granddaughter doing?" Justine was looking at Joe like a dog looks at a piece of raw meat, so Callie's question about her granddaughter didn't please her. "Fine, but you look terrible, Callie. You're so thin and pale. And your hair. It's everywhere." "Some people get nasty when they drink," Callie became pleasant, "but only up to a point." Because of this, she didn't tell Justine that her bleached beehive ran neck and neck with her Ronald McDonald makeup in the personal appearance catastrophe category, and that she'd take her scrawny body over Justine's doughy one any day of the week. "I know I'm a mess," she admitted pleasantly, thereby depleting that emotion and switching to sarcastic bitchiness. "You must give me the name of your beautician and personal trainer sometime," a remark that caused Joe to choke on his pizza. "That wasn't very nice," he chided her after Justine left in a huff. "Her husband has been slowly dying for years, and it's been very rough on her." "I know," Callie semi-agreed. "Bernie started dying on her in the 8th grade when he got rickets." "Rickets? I thought rickets were cured long before then." "They were." She took another sip of her beer. "But whenever Justine wanted to have sex with some guy who resisted because of her relationship with Bernie, she'd tell him that her poor dear Bernie was dying of some horrible disease to make the new guy feel sorry for her. Since she wasn't what you'd call academically gifted, she'd pick one we studied in girls' health class that week, thinking the boys wouldn't know the difference. She was right. Once she got Chucky Getz to do her because he thought Bernie was dying of vaginitis. So," she beamed at Joe charitably because he definitely looked a lot more like Robert Redford than the Pope after her second glass of beer, "what did she tell you was wrong with him?" Huntington's disease, he admitted with what Callie considered a very sexy, sheepish grin. No, she struggled to keep from hooting with glee. That's what Bernie told me she had 2 months ago. Bernie does the same thing? Joe looked so sweetly bewildered she just wanted to press his head to her breasts. Yeah, far as I know they're both healthy as oxes. Oxen. Never missed a day of school except when they were off rolling in the hay or Justine was having a baby. By now, the beer had convinced Callie that Joe was Robert Redford's younger brother, and that she had just enough time to drag him into the back of her van for some hot sex, go home, feed the cats, do the laundry, and everything else that needed to be done before she was due back at Billy's again. Time to go, she announced, standing up. She meant to give Joe a seductive look, but the room began to wobble a little and took her with it. Joe propped her up, then helped her crawl into the van after she refused to let him drive her home. However, even though she would never admit it to him, she did find it comforting when he followed her to make sure she arrived home safely. "You are much, much, much nicer than the Pope," she told him outside her kitchen door as she wrapped her arms around his neck and stuck her tongue in his mouth. "I'm sure I could make you just as happy as Justine," she murmured, pressing her body hard against him. "Oh, baby, I bet you could," he sighed, kissing her neck and sending shivers up and down her spine. Joe's deep, sexy voice sounded so like Redford's that when he then nibbled her earlobe, it was all she could do not to beg him to take her right there on the porch. She moaned, he moaned. She panted, he panted. She thought about ripping his shirt off. She didn't know what he thought, but he began sounding more congested than erotically whispery. Then he sneezed. Somewhere deep inside her hot, wet brain, a tiny voice wailed, "Oh, no! We're making out surrounded by kitty pillowcases!" He sneezed again, almost blowing out her eardrum since his tongue was in her ear at the time. But then he slid his hand under her blouse and obliterated all thoughts of his allergies and the pillow covers she had spread out on the porch to air because she hadn't had time to launder them that morning. "The heck with the kitty bedding!" silently shouted her drunken brain joyously. "Take this man to bed!" But when Callie started to drag Joe inside, she noticed that his breathing had suddenly become more labored. "Joe, are you all right?" she asked, her medical training immediately erasing all libidinous thoughts from her mind. "Yes." Panic momentarily flitted across his face. "No. Inhaler. In a glove compartment." As he moved slowly toward his vehicle, Callie ran ahead and got the inhaler for him. In a short time, he could breathe normally again, but he appeared so angry and embarrassed that neither one of them had any desire to resume where they'd left off. After Joe departed, Callie gave the cats extra helpings of canned food because she felt so guilty about staying out late. "It's better this way, it really is," she told the cats, referring to Joe. "It's a waste of time getting involved with someone who's allergic to cats," she added while she watered the plants. But why was his reaction tonight so much worse than when he was in the same room with Alicia and the kittens? She asked the furry legions when they piled on top of her in bed that night. The only answer that came to mind didn't surprise her, but it wasn't one she wanted to know, and she blocked it from her mind. The next morning, Callie looked and felt so hungover that she put on makeup for the first time since she left California. "Pretty," Billy signed. "You had a good time with Joe last night?" She tried to shrug nonchalantly. "I think he's allergic to me." "You or the cats," came Billy's immediate reply. "Probably the cats, but maybe me. It's better he thinks it's me." "Why?" "Because..." Her fingers paused midair while she tried to figure out how to explain to Billy why it was better for her not to get involved with Joe, or anyone. "You afraid?" Billy sighed before she had a chance to express her thoughts. She nodded. "Too many things I need to work out first," she finally admitted. Then she tried to explain that she had a lot of excess mental baggage to clean out before she could have a decent relationship with anyone. Billy, however, apparently got a completely different message. "Too many toy boxes to clean out?" he asked her. She smiled and shook her head. "Not toy boxes, Mind boxes. There's too much stuff in my head. Makes you crazy? Yes. Too crazy to deal with a man who's allergic to me. Not allergic to you, allergic to cats, Billy signed firmly. The set of Billy's jaw made it very clear that he had no intention of accepting her definition of the problem. Luckily for Callie, however, the man in question entered with his dog, took one look at her, and sneezed 3 times in rapid succession. See? She signed to Billy. It is me. Curly lightly jumped onto the bed beside Billy, and Billy signaled something to Joe that Joe missed entirely because he sneezed again. Callie retreated to the kitchen to get herself the first of several cups of strong coffee that morning. Billy says I should be nice to you because you have toy boxes in your head instead of brains, Joe announced when he appeared in the kitchen a few minutes later. He means excess baggage, or at least that's what I was referring to, she replied. I'm sorry, they then both said in unison. Ladies first. He gestured for her to verbalize her apology first. I'm sorry something about my place set your allergies off, she apologized as she handed him a cup of coffee. My fault, he countered. I should have used the inhaler before I got there. And I'm sorry I was such an ass when it happened. It wasn't your fault. But you shouldn't need to do drugs to feel comfortable in someone's home. Any particular reason why you wanted to drag me into your house? Joe's blatant attempt to divert the conversation from his medical history to sex relieved her. None that I can remember, she replied, handing him another bag of cookies to do with as he would. I was afraid of that. He put down his cup and took the bag. Let me know when you get your toy boxes cleaned out. He turned and disappeared. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.